I'd like to read some verses this evening now from the Old Testament book of 1 Kings and from the chapter 18, the first book of Kings and the chapter 18. These verses that we propose to read from this chapter introduce us to one of the lesser known characters of the Old Testament story. And this particular individual is brought to our notice in connection with one of the best known characters. I refer, of course, to the prophet Elijah, whom we all know, and we know something of his life and his times and his ministry and his various experiences. And now we find him brought face to face with another prophet, the prophet Obadiah, who is altogether less known. But 1 Kings 18 and the verse 7. And as Obadiah was in the way, behold, Elijah met him, and he knew him, and fell on his face and said, Art thou that my lord Elijah? And he answered him, I am. Go tell thy lord, behold, Elijah is here. And he said, What have I sinned that thou wouldest deliver thy servant into the hand of Ahab to slay me? As the Lord thy God liveth, there is no nation or kingdom whither my Lord hath not sent to seek thee. And when they said, He is not there, he took an oath of the kingdom and nation that they found thee not. And now thou sayest, Go, tell thy Lord, behold, Elijah is here. And it shall come to pass, as soon as I am gone from thee, that the Spirit of the Lord shall carry thee whither I know not. And so when I come and tell Ahab, and he cannot find thee, he shall slay me. But I, thy servant, fear the Lord from my youth. Was it not told my Lord what I did when Jezebel slew the prophets of the Lord, how I hid 100 men of the Lord's prophets by 50 in a cave, and fed them with bread and water. And now thou sayest, Go, tell thy Lord, behold, Elijah is here, and he shall slay me. And Elijah said, As the Lord of hosts liveth, before whom I stand, I will surely show myself unto him today. So Obadiah went to meet Ahab and told him, And Ahab went to meet Elijah. We'll end there at verse 16, and we trust the Lord will bless the reading of the verses to all of our hearts once again tonight. It is a matter of some encouragement to know that God will never leave himself without a witness in this world. More encouraging still, that he will not leave himself without witness in the very worst places of the world. We think of Joseph, who feared God in the court of Pharaoh. Daniel, who was a trusted advisor to more than one Babylonian king. And now another, not so well known, but no less important for that. The man Obadiah believed God while serving in the palace of King Ahab. It is difficult to think of a more testing place for a follower of the Lord. If there had been no other evil influence than that emanating from the woman Jezebel, it would have been enough to make the royal apartments a seat of iniquity. Ahab's queen, who hated the worship of the Lord, was the power behind the throne, twisting and manipulating her husband just as she pleased, brooking no contradiction, and defying all who opposed her wicked ways. And so, it is striking to discover in this context of rebellion against God, one whose devotion was so intense. What grace must have been at work to maintain such godliness in the midst of the vilest sin? Yes, Obadiah is certainly worth our consideration. And I thought it especially appropriate that we should consider him on this occasion. We are thinking of Obadiah in respect of his religion. True and genuine religion. And it is summarized for us in those words of testimony at the close of the verse 12. 1 Kings 18, look at the final sentence in verse 12. He says, "But I, thy servant, fear the Lord from my youth." Now, as we think about Obadiah's religion, I want you to notice three simple things. First of all, I want you to notice its commencement detailed. Its commencement detailed. It has been pointed out that many of the strongest witnesses for the Lord are those converted in their youth. When all Israel became disgusted with the wickedness of Eli's sons, the child Samuel ministered before the Lord. David was but a shepherd boy when anointed for kingship. Josiah was very young when he waged war against the religion of Baal. Daniel has been mentioned already, a teenager standing for God in a pagan court. Here is Obadiah testifying to the fact that his faith is no recent arrival. What does he say? He says, "I, thy servant, fear the Lord from my youth." The Hebrew word translated youth is a significant word. It may mean youth in the sense that we understand it. Someone up to the age of about 20, I suppose. But it may also refer to a very young child, an infant. Many believers are converted in teenage years, but many are drawn to the Lord as children. And we must not lose sight of that. It should mold and shape our attitude towards the child. For one thing, we must not despise a child's profession of faith. Rather, must we seek to nurture and to strengthen that little one, praying that God will bring to fruition the seed that has been planted early. Again, we must not neglect gospel work among the children. Rather, must we be diligent and thorough in presenting the claims of Christ, sparing no effort, crying to the Lord that hearts will be opened, that understanding will be given, that faith will be imparted, knowing that all of these things are possible, gloriously possible. This is important work. I say to you tonight, it is exceedingly important work. How can we think of looking to the future, preparing for the future, while altogether neglecting the generation to come? Here's a question for you. How was it that Obadiah was brought to the Lord? Well, the simple answer to that is, we do not know. I can't give you an answer to that question. The Bible gives us no answer to that question. But I hope you will permit me to make a suggestion. It is reasonable to conclude that he had believing parents who did everything they could to see that he came to share their faith. Now, you may say to me, well, that sounds plausible enough, but do you have any reason to make such an observation? How do you come to that conclusion? My answer to you is this: by taking note of the man's name. By taking note of his name. Obadiah. Remember, this was a time when names really meant something. Children were not given their name on the basis of what was in fashion. And you'll know, of course, that from time to time we have these lists produced. And they tell us what is the most popular boy's name and what is the most popular girl's name and how it differs from region to region. It's a fascinating thing. Some very strange choices on those lists. But that's another story. But these names were not given in that way in the age of Obadiah. It was not about which celebrity was in the news. It was not even an acknowledgement of a favorite relative. No, the meaning was the key. The meaning. Now, what does Obadiah mean? It means the servant of Jehovah. The servant of Jehovah. And so, in an age when it was anything but popular to identify with the Lord, would this child's parents have given him such a name if they had been unbelievers? If they had not themselves a deep and genuine reverence for the Lord? I think not. It might have been easier to choose a name associated with some pagan deity or even something you might say was more neutral. But here they are. And the choice of Obadiah surely signifies the earnest desire that their son might grow up to serve the Lord and to stand apart from the idolatry of the day. Isn't this likely? Isn't this the likely scenario? Even if it did not happen like this, there can be no doubting the responsibility of believing parents toward their children. Those children are to be raised, as the scripture puts it, in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. They are to be instructed in gospel truth. They are to be provided with good and godly example. They are to be prayed for earnestly and constantly. These are the responsibilities of Christian parents. And they cannot be delegated to another. Parenthood is a remarkable privilege, but it carries heavy responsibilities. And we are accountable to God for how we discharge those responsibilities. I might make a passing reference to the sad story in the Old Testament age, and we referred to the individual concerned just in passing a few moments ago. You'll find the detail that I have in mind over there in the first book of Samuel and the chapter 3. And of course, it concerns the priest Eli. Eli was a man who no doubt served the Lord in his own way during his own life and ministry. But it's interesting to see that the scripture pinpoints one particular area of failure in Eli's life. We have reference to it in 1 Samuel 3. And in the verse 13, it's the word that the Lord spoke to Samuel. 1 Samuel 3:13 reads, "For I have told him that I will judge his house forever for the iniquity which he knoweth, because his sons made themselves vile, and he restrained them not." His sons made themselves vile, and he restrained them not. See how the Lord calls Eli to account, not for the wickedness which he himself had perpetrated, but rather for the fact that he had refrained from ministering properly to his sons. He had not discharged his parental responsibility well. And of course, we know the sad outcome of that. sad outcome for Eli and for his sons, and indeed for the nation as well. Obadiah then came to know the Lord early. We're thinking about his religion. We have talked about its commencement. Then notice, secondly, its character described here. Its character described. How does Obadiah describe his religion? Well, in our text he says, "But I, thy servant, fear the Lord from my youth." I fear the Lord. That's how he puts it. I fear the Lord. He speaks of it as a fear of the Lord. Now, such language is altogether out of fashion. And I suspect it is out of fashion because the kind of religion it describes is out of fashion. The time was when for a man to be spoken of as God-fearing, and I'm almost old enough to remember that description being used. Talk about a certain man, a certain woman. They were God-fearing. God-fearing people. And the use of that term was to imply that such folk were respected in their community. They were people of conviction and principle and dedication to their faith and to their God. But now, if we hear this language employed at all, if you hear of someone who's spoken of as fearing God, it has an altogether negative connotation. It denotes some kind of fanatic, a killjoy, locked in the past, unable or unwilling to move into the modern world. That's how people see it today. Fearing God. Well, Paul, in that dark portrayal of sin and how sin touches the lives of us all, he made this comment in Romans chapter 3 and the familiar words of verse 18. He said, "There is no fear of God before their eyes." There is no fear of God before their eyes. I say to you tonight, truly, that is the spirit of this age. That's the spirit of the age. But I ask you, would our world not be the better if its population possessed such a fear? Really? Wouldn't this world be a better place? Surely it would. But there is no such fear. There is no deference to the Almighty. Men do what is right in their own eyes. They're not remotely concerned to reflect upon the fact that there is a God in heaven. He sits upon the throne of glory. They are accountable to him. They are responsible to him. And one day they will be called before him in judgment. It doesn't matter. I do not hesitate to say that the fear of the Lord is something that ought to be taught to our children. Psalmist issues the invitation there in the Psalm 34 and the verse 11. He says, "Come ye children, hearken unto me. I will teach you the fear of the Lord." I will teach you the fear of the Lord. Now, of course, we've got to be careful how we use this terminology. We think about the word fear, and we have certain ideas in our mind about what that word means. How you understand a particular term will really be colored by the context in which you come from, and you think about a certain word and you associate it with certain sentiments and certain emotions and feelings. I'm not suggesting for a moment this evening that the child be taught to relate to God in such a way that the relationship is marked by terror, cowering away from some vindictive and merciless tyrant. Listen, my friends, that is not my God. That is not our God. He is a Father. He is good and kind and benevolent in a thousand ways. He is loving. He is gracious beyond description. Oh, I wish this evening that I were so gifted to be able to paint you a picture but would in some way to convey to your mind and heart something of the love of this God. The love of God for sinful men and women such as we. I guess the closest we can get to any such picture is to lift our eyes away to Calvary and think of what this God did in relation to his one and only Son. Think of the sacrifice that was wrought there. Think of how God manifested his love towards sinners in the work of the cross. He so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son. This is the God that I'm speaking of this evening, a loving and gracious God, but he is also a God who is holy and who is just and who is righteous. He deserves our respect. He deserves our honor. He deserves our reverence. We are to obey him and worship him with all of our hearts. This, I say to you, is the fear of the Lord. And as the scripture puts it, it is the beginning of wisdom. It's the beginning of wisdom. That's why we live in an age where ever so many people may be intellectually gifted beyond anything that our forefathers could ever imagine. But at the same time, those people have no wisdom. We might say in spiritual terms, they have no sense. They have no sense because they do not know what it is to fear God. May I just say that to fear the Lord will prompt us to do right, whatever the situation. And we have an example of that in the portion before us this evening from the life of Obadiah. He refers to it here in the latter part of the portion that we read, but you'll see it earlier still in the chapter, in the early verses, verse 3, we have this little detail interjected, if you like, into the narrative here. Verse 3, and the bracket begins towards the end of the verse. It says, now Obadiah feared the Lord greatly. And then it's as if the writer's saying, well, here's the evidence of his fear of God. For it was so, when Jezebel cut off the prophets of the Lord, that Obadiah took 100 prophets and hid them by 50 in a cave and fed them with bread and water. You see, his fear of the Lord, his reverence for the Lord, caused him to do the right thing, even though he was putting himself at the greatest risk. Can you imagine what would have become of this man if Jezebel had been made aware of what he was doing? 100 of the prophets of the Lord having their lives spared because of the endeavors and the ingenuity and the bravery and the courage of this single man. Why did he do it? He did it because he feared the Lord. He did right as a consequence of his fear of the Lord. There are things that we will do, my friends, in this life, and we will do them for this reason, because we fear the Lord. On the other hand, there are things that we will not do, and we will not do them because we fear the Lord. The example that comes to my mind as I stand on my feet here this evening, it comes from the life and times of Nehemiah. And if you study the book of Nehemiah, you'll find that there was a moment in his life when he was the governor of the city of Jerusalem, when he had to make a decision concerning how he was going to act in the oversight of that city. And the backdrop to all of this was a line of conduct and practice that had been followed by all his predecessors. They had done certain things. Nehemiah said, well, actually, I'm not going to do it the way they did it. And I'm not going to do it the way they did it because I fear the Lord. So did not I, he said, because of the fear of the Lord. His relationship with the Lord affected how he conducted himself. And you see, I say to you, dear friends, that's the evidence of genuine religion. Not just about what we say, but how we live, how we conduct ourselves. And we see the evidence of it here in the case of Obadiah. Now, there's one final thing I want to mention here. We are talking about his religion. We've seen its commencement, its character. Then I want you to see as well its continuation demonstrated here. Its continuation demonstrated. Many are the advantages and blessings of an early commitment to the Lord. I mentioned just one Such youthful piety, when it is genuine, perseveres. When it's genuine, it perseveres. Many a time, the Christian parent has been directed to those words of counsel in the book of Proverbs, the chapter 22, and the words of the verse 6, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Now, of course, it may well be that here we have an entrance into another whole argument about what we are to do in relation to the conduct of training up our children. I'm not going to go there this evening. Time doesn't commit that. But it's pretty clear. Train up a child. When he is old, he will not depart from it. Now, alongside that, I want you to set the words of our text again, because Obadiah says this. He says, I, thy servant, fear the Lord from my youth. He didn't just say, in my youth. He said, from my youth. And that indicates that he is still going on. And he's still going forward. Time had not changed him. Whatever his age now, his faith had not decayed. You know how we rejoice in the goodness of God seen so often in preserving those whom he has converted in childhood. You study the lives of some of the great and the godly, some of the most remarkable individuals in the history of the Christian church, and you'll see how they were converted in very tender years. And oh, how the Lord was pleased to spare them and use them so wonderfully. I know there are folk here this evening who were converted very young. And you're still seeking to go forward with the Lord. There's a wonderful picture of mature believers in one of the Psalms. It's the Psalm 92. And towards the end of that Psalm, it's one of a series of wonderful pictures of those who are, I use the word mature, I suppose in every sense. Certainly in terms of age here, that's clear from the context in Psalm 92. And the verse 12 says, the righteous shall flourish like the palm tree. He shall grow like a cedar in Lebanon. Those that be planted in the house of the Lord shall flourish in the courts of our God. They shall still bring forth fruit in old age. They shall be fat and flourishing. Let me emphasize that when the psalmist gives us that expression there at the end of the verse 14, he is not thinking so much about girth as grace. He says they shall be fat and flourishing. He's speaking there of their spiritual fruitfulness. And you see, even though they have been a long time on the road, they are still prospering. They are still fruitful. The Lord is still using them. Now, in the case of Obadiah, there were some considerations here, some additional considerations. We think about the fact that his religion continues. And I suggest to you that it continues because he was not carried away by the fashion of evil times. He was not carried away by the fashion of evil times. To be a follower of Baal was the in thing in those times. Jehovah was a relic of the past. The priests had fled. Public worship ceased. But through it all, Obadiah stood firm. He didn't bow to the spirit of the age. My friends, such resolution and such determination is the need of the hour. It's the need of the hour. Oh, we must not be carried away by the fashion of evil times. Obadiah wasn't. And he was not undone by the particular difficulty of his situation. He lived and worked in the palace. He was never far away from the gaze of wicked Jezebel. No doubt he had to be wise. Of course he did. He had to be cautious and careful in his conduct. You might say he had to walk a tightrope. Lord Jesus Christ instructed his disciples that they were to be not only as harmless as doves, but also as wise as serpents. We might say that such a man was Obadiah. He was not compromising. He remained true in the midst of it all. Very, very difficult circumstances. And then finally, his head was not turned by success. That is a great danger, isn't it? Those who stand firm when all the world is against them may be bowled over by advancement and position and flattery. We have seen that happen so often. Obadiah was a trusted official in the royal court. He was a member of the household. But it didn't change him spiritually. It didn't change him. What a testimony this man had. It's the testimony of a man who was brought to the Lord as a child. May we see such conversions again. May we see the children and the young people converted to Christ. May we see them growing up, not just physically, but spiritually. And may we see them advance along the way and continue to be disciples of Christ.